Welcome to Bare Naked Money, the podcast where we strip down the complex world of finance to its bare essentials. With your hosts, Josh Shalek and Colin White, portfolio managers with Varican Capital Management, Inc.
Hello, and welcome to Bare Naked Money. Here today, we will be talking about money in a continued series. Today, we have myself, Matt Kempton, and of course, your familiar and esteemed host, Colin White. Colin, welcome.
Thanks, Pat. It's exciting. It's even more exciting to talk about. I believe our topic today is going to be talking to your spouse about money. Now, just for the record, and I should, full disclosure, I've been married for 32 years. So I've been talking to one spouse for 32 years about money. And believe me, that is as instructive as talking with a few hundred clients and their spouses about money. This will be a fun conversation.
It will be. And I've been married a shorter period, a little more than 2 years. But I first, before starting this off, because I've done a bit of research into this episode, I'd like to thank my spouse. Michelle, I'd like to thank you that we fight about things, but money isn't our most common fight. And that puts us in a different group than it seems most are in. So I'm thankful we don't have the same fights it seems many are.
Wow, that is like the biggest public suck up that I've seen in a long time.
No, she doesn't listen to this.
But, oh, okay. All right, fair enough. Somebody's probably going to send her a link to this, though. No, but you're right. And it's funny, you've done the looking at the studies, but I can tell you from experience, money is one of the biggest stressors in a relationship. And it's one that, people have very different takes on money. They've come from different backgrounds. There's a different reality. And then their financial situation changes over time. And as you grow together as a couple, your financial situation always also changes as a couple. And, so you need to be constantly acquiring new skills and new abilities to make decisions. That's not always easy. Not everybody's on even if you start on the same page, you may not be on the same page all the way through.
And so just in my experience, we've gone through a couple recent sort of the bigger events, wedding being a big one. We've just had, our little guy is a year and a half old now. So having a baby comes with a lot of expenses and a lot of just new decisions to make. Many of them money related. So you find yourself in uncharted territories in a lot of ways, but and even in the money discussion ways.
Well, yeah, because when you get married and you don't have a child, then you have a certain, feeling about money and how it's important. You have a child. All right. That's going to shake everything up. What are your joint priorities with regards to how you're going to raise a child? And there's a monetary consequence to that. And so each major event in your life, it causes a different set of money issues. And whether it's short-term versus long-term or, wanting to, the level of support you want to be putting aside for the next generation, how important that is, the life experiences you want to give, you feel you need to give or want to give your family, all these things change over time. So it has to be an active conversation and, you need some guardrails, I would suggest. To try to keep it on the road, because it can very easily turn into a conflict, because it's often not even a money conversation. It's like, don't you love our child? It's like, yes, and I don't think that sending them to private school is a requirement. Well, that means you don't love our child. Like, well, no, it doesn't mean that. It's just a different opinion on a sensibility that has a fairly significant monetary impact to it. So it's, the lines blur, which is what makes this really, really difficult.
Very true. And I'd like to come back to those guardrails. I think we should spend some time on that. But first, I just want to give some stats here. And I think we've all heard that money is one of the leading causes of divorce. And just some further stats. And here's some numbers from Fidelity, in fact, a couples and money study. And what they found in that is that 1 in 5 couples identified money as their greatest relationship challenge. And nearly 1 in 4 individuals said they were often frustrated by their partner's money habits, but let it go for the sake of keeping the peace. Mm-hmm. And these were couples who were over the age of 25, married or in long-term relationships. So these are serious relationships that this survey came out of. And then according to a February 2024 survey from Bread Financial, 56% of couples say their spending, saving, and investment philosophies aren't compatible with their partners. That can lead to trouble, of course. And of the respondents who merged their bank accounts with their partner, almost half, 48%, said they uncovered financial mismanagement, bad credit scores, or unknown or concerning purchases. Do those numbers line up with what you've seen?
Well, but they're all suspect, to be honest, right? Because, you know, there's a materiality aspect to things, right? So there's the big issues, like what are your priorities, short-term versus long-term, owning a home versus not owning a home, educating kids versus not educating. There's big picture items. And if you align or can find a way to find a common ground on those big issues, blowing up the boat over the fact that your partner stops at Tim Hortons every morning to get a coffee and that's a complete waste of money, even though that's not affecting any of your long-term financial or short-term financial goals, you really got to question yourself, because there's some people that that's just offensive to. You shouldn't be buying a Starbucks every day. Only stupid people do that. Why are you stupid? And, you know, to the extent that it impacts larger goals, okay, maybe it's got some heft to it. But if, you know, you're accomplishing your retirement goals and you're living in the house you want to live in and you're living the life you want to live, then, you know, that's where, you know, the challenge is to maybe let that go. You know, the expression I always use in life in general is this the hill you want to die on? Like, is this worth blowing up the whole thing? And because oftentimes in relationships, it can get, you know, a little bit petty from time to time, a little bit tit for tat. And when you are so completely enmeshed with another human being and they do something that just annoys you, it's difficult to let that water roll off your back, for sure. So, you know, when I'm talking guardrails, and again, we've had this conversation in other contexts about talking about money, having a moderator in the room, you know, having a professional who can guide the conversation a little bit can be helpful, because, you know, I feel the advisor's role is to, you know, build the common ground and, you know, okay, so here are the long-term goals everybody's trying to accomplish. Here's the way to accomplish them. If you can get that part relatively lined up, then the little shit, you know, my wife likes to shop at Costco. I think that's dumb. There's only two of us, but you know, it's not going to derail any of the plans that we have. So it's just one of those things. Ah, it's kind of dumb, but all right, fair enough. We're spending money at Costco. So it's just putting it in context, like how much does it really matter? Cause if you try to fight about everything, that will make your relationship very, very toxic.
Well, absolutely. I will agree with your wife on the Costco front. So I am the more cautious around money of our couple, though we are similar, but I would be more on that end. But Costco is what gets me. Costco is the greatest store in the world. And I just find myself creeping down different aisles and the cart just grows and grows and grows because it's, well, they set it up that way. But Costco is my weakness.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, we used, you know, again, not to make this a Costco podcast, but we had two young kids at home and we had a house and we were maintaining a property. Yeah, you know what? The quantities of stuff and the quality of stuff you could pick up at Costco made a ton of sense. Two people living in an apartment. Like, really? Like, how much toilet paper can we store? You know, I don't need 5 pounds of chicken spice. You know, the little shaker does just fine by me. So. But again, the point, and to circle back to the podcast, is this is what happens. Even with us, even with you and I just talking about relationships, we bunny trailed off. See how easy that is to do? So, you know, when talking to your spouse about money, you know, number one, first thing, hugely important, ignoring it's not going to fix it. Ignoring it's just going to make, it's going to just build and build and build and be a problem down the road. Yeah. So, but try to talk about the big issues, like short-term versus long-term. That's the kind of stuff that you want to kind of find a common ground that everybody can live with. Because if, you know, one partner is saying, I'm going to retire at 52, and the other one is saying, I'm going to work into my 60s, that's a disconnect. You got to sit down and talk about that. Like that's a lifestyle difference that you guys are going to have to try to work out in one way or another. That's not something you want to let, you know, the one spouse gets to 52 and said, that's it, I'm retiring. And the other spouse going, no, you're not. Like, you don't want to get to that moment. You don't want to get to that moment without having talked about it, because you are going to have some very, very real stress in a stressful time, because again, the fracture's already happened. You know, talking about it for a few years leading up to it, maybe one or the other can make their peace with, you know, some kind of a compromise. Not talking about it is not the strategy. And if the talking about it leads to a huge issue, well, it's better to have it earlier than later. You have to get, you know, deal with it in whatever way you have to deal with it.
Well, good point. And much of it kind of ties itself into financial planning and understanding the goals. That's a space where you talk about goals. You each lay out your goals. Maybe one is very interested in traveling. Hopefully both of you are. Trips can come with different levels of lavishness, or can be very simple. And so just because you're both interested in traveling doesn't mean that it immediately aligns you on the money side of it, but at least you're talking about it. A system, I think having, especially earlier days, a system around things might be helpful. Once starting these conversations, we both decided we'd like to save money. We know for these future goals, well, let's put some systems in place. If we're immediately saving our monies to our RSP, monies to our tax-free savings account, here's the leftover pool. Well, if it gets spent at Tim Hortons, if it gets spent at Costco, that's okay, because we've already put things towards these bigger goals that we've talked about. And there's a little bit of wiggle room in here for inefficiencies.
Well, no, and it's important that, you know, for a human being to function, it's like, you know, here's X amount of money, just go do whatever you want with it. So that if you really need to stop at Tim Hortons, because that's going to make you feel good at a moment in time and stuff, you've got the capacity to do that. But I will challenge you that a financial plan per se is not the answer. Like, a financial plan as in projecting your financial future is not where the issue lies, because life doesn't go in a straight line. And the first time that you run into a bump where an inheritance gets received, or there's some kind of major financial bump where we surprisingly need to spend $15,000 on a roof, when those things happen, it's more about the principles of how you deal with money. It's more about being able to talk about money, because a projection is not going to happen. Like, whatever you sit down and project in your financial plan, that's absolutely not the future. But the part of a financial plan that is absolutely worth its weight in gold is talking about goals and how you talk about money. Because developing a language around talking about money and realizing where the commonalities are in how you set goals and understanding where your partner's head is allows you to have the words to have a conversation about the inevitable things that happen. Like, it's like all of a sudden it becomes very important that, that you need a lot of money to support your child because they're going to go away to school. And you guys both agree this is a big deal. We weren't planning on it, but this is where we've ended up. So no, it's not going to be $4,000 or $5,000 a year. It's going to be $25,000 a year. Okay. How do we handle that? So having the ability to talk about money, having shared your principles with your partner and understand where the compromises need to be made, that's the skill set that you want to develop. Unfortunately, I think too many people, when you say financial plan, is like you make a projection and then one partner uses that to beat the other one over the head. That wasn't in our plan. And it's like, that's not healthy, and it's also not real. It just isn't. There's too many uncertainties in life.
Yeah, no, good point. So these conversations and this getting on the same page needs to happen, but how soon is too soon? When do you start finding out if there's this alignment? In this conversation, I started actually having an idea. Maybe the best first date you should have is at Costco. You're going to find so much more out about that person if you do that than if you go to a coffee shop, if you go anywhere else. You meet at Costco.
Now we're giving dating advice. Wow, you're so outside our lane.
Well, it's money related though. You learn about that person in ways that you might not otherwise. So, but when is too early to start those conversations? I feel this should happen before a marriage. These are important ways to know if you're compatible.
Yeah, listen, and I got married relatively early in life, and no, I didn't, have all the conversations that maybe should have been had in the depth that they should have been had, for sure. But for me, when you get to the point of cohabitating, whether that's a marriage or not, you're going to start living with somebody. Don't walk down that road without starting to have conversations, and because if you're completely financially incompatible, if you guys can't have a good, honest, thorough conversation about money and priorities in a very honest, open, and transparent way, you're setting yourself up for a world of hurt. Right now, there's people that they're so wonderful, and if you're going to make your decisions emotionally, then you're going to pay the price for that. But also, you don't want to be on the second date saying, all right, so listen, I brought my checking statement with me. Can I see your checking statement? Let's go through how we spend money. Like, you know, that's probably not the romance most people are looking for. So.
I mean, to me, that sounds quite romantic. What's your credit score?
Oh, man, you CFAs continue to just amuse me.
But to your point on the, I mean, again, according to this Bread Financial survey, 56% of couples say they are essentially not financially compatible. So.
Well, again, but I challenge that because I've been talking with clients like, you know, my partner, you know, stops at Tim Hortons every morning. It's like, well, yes, but you're on path to retire at age 55, like you both want. You take a big vacation every year, your house is paid for, and you get two paid for vehicles in the driveway. That's not a problem. That's not a financial problem. That's a behavior problem. And that can be just as offensive, right? So when you ask a partner about their partner's money habits, they are going to make a judgment call that may or may not be fiscally material, right? Because the lines get blurred and they absolutely get blurred all the time. As I deal with those conversations where a client's perfectly financially stable, but one client doesn't like how the other client is dealing with money in their child. One client doesn't like how the other client's dealing with, you know, Costco, or they buy a new truck every 5 years. And that's unnecessary. Nobody needs a new truck every 5 years, right? So in a survey like that, I guarantee the answer is, oh yeah, no, we buy new vehicles. There's no way we should buy new vehicles, even if they're completely financially stable. You know, so to me, again, that's not a financial conflict. That's a behavioral conflict that happens to have a dollar figure attached to it.
Well, I think I'd push on you a little bit on this one.
Well, look at you getting brave and stupid all at the same time.
Well, just to take the recognition that we work at a wealth management firm, and the clients we speak with have qualified to work at a wealth management firm. And so there is a segment of the population we'd be having these conversations with more often, in a segment we just frankly aren't as often because they aren't sitting in our offices.
I will cede the high ground to you on that one. That is a valid point.
Oh, no. Thank you, sir.
Look, it happened. So, no, absolutely true. But money is a funny thing. Like, there's a certain threshold of money that they talk about that up until a certain point, all you're worried about is money. Like, if you don't have enough money to feed yourself, you don't have enough money for shelter. If you're in survival mode, that's all that matters to you. It's 105% of what you care about. Then you reach a certain threshold where your basic needs are looked after. And then it becomes, you know, you begin to care about other things. You can set priorities, you can have goals, all that kind of stuff. So again, it really depends on where you are on the socioeconomic scale as well. But again, back to the topic of our podcast, no matter where you are, talking about the money and having a money language and being able to have a money conversation, even if you know that you're on completely different pages, because some people look at it and said, well, we can't talk about money because I can't get them to stop going to Tim Hortons. Like, well, you maybe can't get them to stop that behavior, but it doesn't invalidate every conversation about money. You need to be able to talk about it. It is important. And if you don't, it will just cause a problem that's going to grow and grow. And one day it's going to be an insurmountable.
I agree with you on that. And so maybe that segues us interestingly into this piece. So I read in an article online, and this is coming from a financial therapist, which, did you know that was a job?
I the first time I've heard that, I've been referred to that.
I was going to say, I thought that was us. It's fine.
Well, it depends on the day and depends on the conversation, but yes, I've been called that.
So she has a few sort of approaches to having the conversation with your spouse. Just maybe some guidelines to put in place. And so one of them is just to set regular times to discuss finances. The next, to consider putting aside the word money. So I don't know if you sub another word in, or if you just don't say that word money.
Like bagel? Like, do we have search? I don't understand where you're going with this.
That would fix everything. Finally, and I think this is quite important. Focus on the future, not the past. You know, we can only look forward here. And, you know, if it becomes just a war of, well, you bought that double-double, for years ago, when I asked you not to, you know, you're not going to make any progress here. So
I mean, that's just relationship advice. Like if, you know, if you're going to be in a long-term relationship and you're going to carry forward something forever, eventually there's going to be so much weight in what you're carrying forward. It's just going to weigh everything down. So being forward-looking is helpful. I guess I don't like the way the first was raised there, you know, set aside time to talk about money. I don't think this needs to be a weekly thing or a daily thing or even a monthly thing. You know, I think that having a conversation about money and establishing a sandbox that everybody can play in and then stop talking about it is the best way to handle it. So again, for clients, we sit down and have a conversation with maybe every 6 months or once a year. Okay, that's the meeting. Let's sit down and let's put it all on the table. And let's make some decisions. And those kind of decisions can be to weigh short-term versus long-term. So our monthly savings program is this. You know, we're going to try to reduce our debt over this period of time. We're going to blah, blah, blah. And we're going to save, you know, 10% or 15% of the money coming to our account. We're going to put into savings. All right. Everybody agreed? Great. Don't talk about it again. Just go live it. And, you know, 6 months later, a year later, sit down and say, okay, are we happy with that balance? Are we saving at the right level? You know, are we making the right progress to all our goals? And then put it all on the table, have a big conversation about it, then make the decision, and then stop talking about it. Because if every morning you get up, it's another conversation about putting money into the TFSA, you know, then that's not good. That's toxic. You know, because again, there's no new information available every day. There's no new information available every week necessarily. So having a conversation and setting, okay, so you know, $500 goes into your individual checking account. You can do whatever you want with that. And, you know, $200 is going to go to the TFSA, $200 is going to go to the RESP. And we're going to set aside money there into the, you know, do that. And then forget about it for a while. Just go do it. Live within it. And if, when you sit down after 6 months and say, that's not working, I want to make some changes. Okay, let's put everything on the table and have a conversation rather than a pitched battle that's being fought every day where you're trying to make progress towards getting what you want, whether it's a new truck or a vacation or more money on your allowance or whatever it is.
Yeah, you know, a daily calendar event where we see, well, now you spent this last week and I spent this, so that means I get to spend this much more. That's not going to get you where you're trying to go.
It may get you exactly where you're trying to go, but it's not a happy place. The people around you will not be happy there.
Right.
The one person who's keeping score like that is going to be very happy we're keeping score like that, but that is a toxic way to deal with your finances.
Good point.
You took a trip, therefore I get to spend money. Okay. That's the other thing I hate doing. People use, you know, get into the whole justification, like I deserve this, I worked hard for this, they did this, therefore I did this. No matter what words you put around it, math is going to math. You know, so if money leaves the account, that money left the account. That doesn't mean there's more money there in the account to spend. You know, you spend money and use that as justification for spending more money. Math's going to math. You know, there's going to be a mathematical consequence to that. And that's where the birds come home to roost, because math is going to math. And, you know, no matter what justification you put forward, if the sum total of everything you're doing is unsustainable, it's going to show up. It doesn't matter how good your reason was, right? And it's funny because people will come in and try to almost get my approval. Like, you know, well, I did this, this, and this. It's great. Is that okay? I don't know. Is that, you tell me, is that okay? You know, you're not going to be able to take that vacation anymore, but, you know, okay, you've made that choice, right? Well, no, I want to take the vacation. Well, where's the money? Well, you said it was okay. No, I didn't say it was okay. Again, there's a financial consequence to everything. You can make whatever decision you want, but it's going to be a consequence. And as we've already discovered in this conversation, it quickly morphs from, you don't love the kid. It's like, well, yes, I love my kid. It's like, well, that's not a money conversation. And you're talking about how much money to put away towards their education. That's a money conversation. You know, to have that devolve into, why don't you love our kid? That's why it's complicated. That's where the streams get crossed, and that's where people's feelings get hurt and expectations and all the rest of it.
Now, so to these other points, so what about having a conversation about bagels?
See, then this is the problem. I'm not that person. I don't exist in that space. So, you know, not saying the word money sounds all colors is stupid to me. But I'm not going to say that that's not going to work for some people. For some people, that's going to lift the emotional weight of the conversation. I've reached a point in my life where I recognize what doesn't make any sense to me can still make sense to others. So if you're, you know, the triggering effect of the word money, because, you know, your spouse screamed the word at you enough that you have a negative emotional response to it every time you hear the word, post-traumatic stress, to call it a bagel and make everybody giggle for a second and put them in a better frame of mind to have a conversation. You know what? Fair enough. You're writing your own movie. If that works for you, fantastic. I'm not going to hold that out and say, like, this is how you have to do it. I just am not that person.
And then to the last point, I mean, I think we've already touched on it. Focus on the future, not the past. Yes, do that.
Well, that's a healthy philosophy for anybody on anything, really, right? So I don't think that's specific to money.
Well, historians might disagree.
Well, for me, it's, you know, what's next? I mean, all we can do as humans, like, we're moving forward. You can't go back in time. You know, so no matter where you are, it's, you know, let's focus on what's next. Worrying about anything has never made, it's never made any difference in the entire history of humanity. You know, carrying things from your past with you doesn't help. I mean, you should learn from the past, take the lesson, but don't relive the moment. Like, don't be tortured by the moment. Just, what's next? What are you going to do about it? Well, this and this happened. It's terrible. That wasn't the question. What are you going to do? And that's something, again, for all my years in coaching. Like, so I love sports as a metaphor for life, because it very much is. You know, you've had a negative outcome. You know, the ref was bad, you had a bad game or whatever. You're all pissed off, and you're pissed off at your teammates, you're pissed off at the referee, and you're pissed off at your parents. And my question to the athlete at that moment is, like, what are you going to do with that? I'm not going to address, like, we're not going to get into any of that. But, you know, what are you going to do? That's all that counts. What are you going to do next? Well, okay. So now we take that energy and put it into the next thing, rather than put that energy into complaining about something and carrying something forward. So, but then that absolutely applies to money. You know, what are you going to do next? Like, I should have, I could have, I would have had $1 million if I'd done this. Like, what are you going to do right now?
I almost pulled the trigger on NVIDIA and I just didn't. And now.
here we go. Yeah. FOMO.
Oh, no. So we spend most of the time here talking, I think mostly about budgeting as it comes to money issues within a couple. But what about the differences when it comes to investing and maybe in risk tolerances within a household when they can differ? Because I've seen this, one with a much more tolerance for growth, for risk, and maybe the other more safety, more, you know, preserving that capital. How do you handle How do you manage those conversations and think about investing for the household when they both have a different comfort with the risk within investments?
Well, one of the roles of a professional advisor is to give enough oxygen for everybody to speak, you know, which I'm very, very big on. I need both members of the household there, and they're both going to participate. And that goes against how some houses are organized. Some houses, there's one spouse or the other that looks after these things. No, you don't. Shut up. And to the man who thinks that they're looking after it, it's like, shut up. You're going to die first. You know, statistically, your wife is going to be my client longer than you. So shut up. She needs to be here. But it's giving that oxygen, and that's a moderated thing. Let everybody in the room speak, because I often find, they're not as far apart as they think. You know, they don't understand what the word risk is, you know, and honestly, risk is a very nebulous, you know, word, right? Some people think that, you know, the stock market is risky. Well, it's volatile, yes, it moves up and down, but, you know, many people equate, you know, the risk of going to zero. You know, so as I explained to people, you're investing in the stock market and you are afraid of losing all your money. In order for you to lose all your money, every company you know has got to go into business on the same day. And if that happens, we probably have more trouble than the fact you've lost your RSP money. So it's like, oh, I can't lose all my money. Well, no, you don't have to put yourself in a position where you can lose all your money. Like, you know, you can put yourself in a position where it can be volatile and move up and down. But, you know, so having a good, thorough conversation about what everybody means about risk, because oftentimes when you get into a couple that's fighting over money, it just becomes at 30,000 feet, it's like, we need to take more risk. I hate risk, but we need to take more risk in order to retire. But I hate risk. And it just talking points back and forth. Like, it's never, it's like, well, what do you mean by risk? Like, that they never get there. It's like, well, you know, I don't want to risk losing all our money. Oh, okay. That's a valid fear. Everybody should have that fear, you know, and that's not what's necessarily being proposed, right? So again, having a moderated conversation where you get away from, oh, they don't take enough risk or he takes too much risk. They've already made their judgments. They've retreated to their mountaintops and they're just going to throw stones back and forth to turn that into, well, what do you mean by that? Draw out a conversation, have a moderated conversation where everybody gets to talk. The vast majority of the time, I've been able to feel that I have found a good middle ground for them that satisfies everybody. Because again, there's this misconception that, you know, again, I got to swing for the fences. I got to be in the next hot thing and I got to be that. And you know, I need to take that level of risk in order to be financially successful because that's what Warren Buffett did or whatever. And that's not always the truth. That's not always accurate. So having a nice moderated conversation where everybody gets to describe what they're talking about with risk, and then your portfolio can be different things. You can have a spouse, you know, say, okay, what if we took X percentage invested it this way, and we took X percentage and invested it this way. And then as a professional, you do the math to say, this will still accomplish your goals. The expected rate of return of investing this way is still likely to get you where you want to be. And also as a professional, you sit back and say, well, if you do this, you're going to have to change your goals. You're not going to be able to retire at that age. You should expect to work longer or you know, whatever the impact is. Because it's all about, you know, is what I'm doing now effective? And then, you know, okay, is it or isn't it? Is it likely to lead to success or is it likely to lead to failure? You know, and these things are not normally black and white. It's all probability. But that's why it's a complicated conversation that couples honestly are not really well equipped to have.
No, that's one that we especially find ourselves in the middle of. And a financial plan can be helpful in just finding that middle ground around what does it mean, like you say, what does it mean to take risk? And if these are the things that are most important to you, and those are long-term considerations, well, here's the long-term asset allocation or risk, maybe overall level that should be able to get you there. It'll fluctuate, things will fluctuate in the meantime, but we're not looking at a scenario where we're going zero. And so if that's what you were worried about, well, that's not really what we're talking about here today. It's just a looking at statements month to month, then the balance will change.
Well,
are you up at night? Because,
well, this is the other thing. Like, you know, you can do it exactly the right thing, but somebody comes into the office, I haven't slept in 3 days. Oh my God, we have to change something. Like, obviously this isn't working. Like all the rational conversation in the world, it isn't, doesn't matter. I mean, I can remember back in 2008, I had a client whose mother passed away in Florida. So she was down in Florida in a retirement community, and she was kind of dealing with her mother's affairs. And this is 2008. So she was at the epicenter of, you know, streets and streets of empty houses and bankruptcies everywhere, and everything was a complete mess. And everybody around her was absolutely up to their neck in it. And her mother just passed, and she was emotionally very, you know, very wrought. And, you know, in 2008, when the market was doing what it was doing, the advice we gave was just, you know, if your goals are still long term, let's just ride this out. You'll be fine. And she called me, and she was in such a state. It was like, okay, we'll sell everything. Emotionally, there's just no way I was going to be able to build a bridge to get her anywhere comfortable because of the environment in that particular situation. So that can trump rational thought. You try to insert rational thought there just so it was in the conversation, but it's going to get overwhelmed by the actual facts of what's going on for that person at that time. So that's one of those judgment calls. That is absolutely one of the things when it comes to talking about money, whether it's your spouse or your parents.
Are there any areas you think we've missed here when speaking with your spouse, keys to success of a long-term marriage? And this is one of the areas you've obviously had to find some ways to work together on. Any advice to people out there?
Again, it's just talking about money is tough. Yeah, but do it anyway. Like this is not that the cost of avoiding this dramatically outweighs the temporary comfort you're going to have by not talking about it. And, you know, develop a bagel language if you need to, you know, find a trusted advisor that you can sit down in front of once a year, or once every 6 months or whatever frequency, and just put everything on the table again and rebalance everything, you know, but don't turn it into a daily conversation. You brought up something earlier about budgeting, and there's different kinds of budgeting. Different people have different proclivities towards budgeting. And budgeting itself can be wrought because then you are counting every expense, you know, how much money you did spend at Starbucks or how much money you did spend on groceries or eating out or whatever. But some people can make that work in certain couple situations. And there needs to be, and you brought this up really, needs to be slack in the system. Don't plan everything down to the nickel. Like there has to be slack. And nobody, life doesn't go in a straight line. The planet doesn't travel in a straight line. You know, so leave slack in the system. Let people be people, because there's going to be a day that your brain just desperately needs to have something. And if there's slack in the system, that's going to allow it to happen and not derail something that's more important. Let it happen. Like don't look for financial perfection, and don't look for one person to live up 100% to somebody else's financial sensibilities. That's an expectation that's too high.
That's true. And so to our engineering friends, I hope you put that last point in. It's quite important.
It's the whole ball game. And, you know, again, is this the hill you want to die on? I do have clients with spreadsheets and they laugh at themselves, most of them, and they understand the limitation of a spreadsheet, but it's also a compulsion. They need to do a spreadsheet. Okay. Let's try to do it in such a way that you don't set the world on fire, because nobody else is going to give a shit about your spreadsheet. You know that, right? But some people, that's how they feel in control. So it's not worth it not talking about money. You should talk about money. You should do it with a moderator in the room, and whoever that moderator is, financial advisor, should be well suited to that. And, you know, recognize that if you think you are at an intractable point, that there's no way forward, there very well could be. But, you know, sit down in front of somebody, have a conversation, see if they can find a middle ground, and maybe relieve all the tension and stress you're feeling.
Yeah. And I guess as a closing thought, do you think people are going to start going on first dates at Costco?
Well, you're such an influential man, you're an influencer. So I think that there's a very good chance that over the next, you know, 5 to 7 days that'll become a trend and then fade out right away.
All right. Well, Costco, share some sales in that first week of this trend continuing on. And actually, maybe one final thought. It's interesting. Money is such an important item in marriages, and it's, you know, it's such a cause of divorce. But do you ever hear of someone breaking up or ending a relationship and money is the reason why? Or is it money becomes, it's a big frustration, which then leads to this, which then leads to that, and then that's the reason why? I don't think I've ever heard anyone ever say that. We broke up because of money.
I absolutely have, but money is the manifestation of something else. Mm-hmm. You know, it more goes like, you know, we broke up because of money, because I found out that they had a credit card they didn't tell me about, and they put a mortgage on the house they didn't tell me about. So it was the deceit, the deceit, the trust, and the alignment of what's important. You know, I've got no skill whatsoever in the, you know, giving marital advice, but you have to be aligned on a moral level. Like you have to have a shared belief in what's right and what's wrong at some level. And sometimes that gets manifested in money. It could be somebody, you know, they gamble, or they're adventure seeking or whatever, or they, you know, they're constantly trying to spend money to make themselves feel better, or, you know, whatever. There's some kind of disconnect. Now you could argue, is it that disconnect that caused the marriage to break up? It was manifested in money. It had a money effect. So was it money that caused the breakup? Or was it the fact that they just weren't compatible on a moral level?
Yeah, it's deep. It's interesting. I think that's beyond our expertise.
Oh, I think I prefaced my whole comment with that. Yes, it's beyond my expertise. I mean, I'm sitting at the edge of the abyss staring in going, I think this is what I see. No, it's a complicated conversation. It can be an icky conversation, but it's a crucial conversation. If you're not having it, you're not having it at your own peril. All right. So thanks for leading our conversation and coming up with these ideas. You know, if the viewers give us enough positive feedback on Matt's performance, we'll let them keep doing this. So I'll make sure that the Matt fan club is heard from. And if you like what you're hearing, pass it on to your friends, hit follow. And we're always open to suggestions for future content. So reach out to us and let us know if you'd like to hear a particular topic dissected. So thanks, Matt.
Thank you, Colin.
If you're breaking a sweat trying to figure out what your financial advisor is talking about, you're not getting the service you need. You probably hate trying to get an answer from them, but you also think moving your accounts will be a headache. And it might be. But working with DontRockTheBoatWealthPlanning.com or .ru isn't exactly stress-free, is it? Call us. We will demystify the world for you.
Please note, the information provided in this podcast is for general information purposes only. It is not intended as financial, investment, legal, tax, accounting, or other professional advice. Our discussions are not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities or to make any specific investments. Any decisions based on information contained in this podcast are the sole responsibility of the listener. We strongly advise consulting with a professional financial advisor before making any financial decisions. Listeners should be aware that investing involves risks and that past performance is not indicative of future results. Bare Naked Money is produced by Verican Capital Management, Inc., a licensed portfolio management company in Canada. We operate under the regulatory framework established by the provincial securities commissions in the provinces within which we operate. The views expressed in the podcast are our own and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of any regulatory authority. Remember, at Verican Capital Management, Inc., we focus on aligning our goals with yours, prioritizing integrity and transparency. For more information about us and our services, please visit our website. Thank you for listening, and let's continue to challenge the norms of the financial services industry together.